Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, we talk about the book AI for Analogs, A Simple, Plain English Guide. Jeffrey Weiss writes about turning his midlife stress into positivity in his book, Racing Against Time. We talk to Erin O'Malley about her memoir, The Brat and the Bullfighter. We also talk about the book ADHD in Professionals, and the Epilepsy Foundation talks about the success of their recent fundraising event.
Let's talk all things AI. My next guest writes the book entitled AI for Analogs. It's a simple, plain English guide. That's your tagline. Even better, Dr. Dave Skippers, Grand Rapids native, vice president, chief academic officer, academic dean, dean with Troy-based Walsh College, to talk about that life as well. So, Dr. Skippers, good morning to you.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for calling Grand Rapids your home and yet making Walsh College your home away from home. Let's get right into this work, AI for Analogs, A Simple, Plain English Guide. Obviously, AI is not going away. It's here to stay. So why write a book about AI from your angle?
Actually, the reason I wrote the book was interesting because, so as I've been out, I do speak quite a bit about AI, how to use it effectively, and things like that. As I was kind of doing, I'll say, my tour, having conversations and doing speeches, you know, I worked with a group that, I'll say, clearly was had a lot more Gen X and baby boomers in it. So, you know, leaned heavily into the retiree community, and it became pretty clear to me that I don't know that a lot of the resources that are speaking about AI are, in essence, speaking and providing AI in a context that helps, I'll call it that, what I dub the analog generation, which is really the people who grew up without or before AI and before computers, you know, really infiltrated our daily lives. So the goal here was to put it in a position of use other, you know, cultural references from, you know, the generations, you know, that their timelines and their perspectives, and create an explanation that syncs up really well so that they can align. I'll say the big message I have, which may be somewhat different, is that I believe that the older generations actually have a bigger advantage with AI because they have real powerful skills that they built before AI came onto the into the arena, and they can leverage those if they understand how to integrate with AI well.
Zoning even deeper, who would be your target audience for AI for Analogs?
Yeah, the target audience, that is specifically really, you know, 40 to 45 plus. I'll say, I'm not to pick on the younger generations. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff, we would call them digital natives. They grew up with computers. Things are really kind of geared towards them now. A lot of the explanations are marketed for them. This is really to address, I felt, the groups that are not being marketed too well, or, you know, or provided explanations that work for them.
All right, getting into the weeds, what are the biggest challenges and opportunities with AI today, Dr. Skippers?
I think the biggest challenges and opportunities with AI today, one, I would explain AI, I think, very differently than most folks. So, you know, in running AI programs, I've done a lot of, I'll say, practical experimentation with it. So I've done things like I've created digital twins of myself that I collaborate with. I've tried to evolve their thinking to kind of make those things exemplary in how they operate. And so some of the things that I've come away with is, one, I think one of the big challenges is, I think a lot of business thinks that it's just a software implementation. This is more than that. I would describe what AI is as a socio-technological force. And what do I mean by that? Because that's kind of a fancy word, so, or fancy phrase. What I mean by that is, as human beings, if you look back through history, there's a lot of different examples where humans were really great at creating tools. And when we create these very innovative tools, it actually changes how we as a species operate and think, and it actually impacts our evolution as, you know, obviously as a group of individuals here on the face of the planet. So some of the, I'll say, you know, obviously computers have changed things very well, but we're going to go, if you go back to things like the Gutenberg printing press changed, it actually democratized information in a very obviously print form, but it was the foundation of knowledge in our university systems and everything today. The big difference, and I could go through and cite a few different examples, but this particular technology is going to operate differently with us. It will challenge how we think. It will challenge how we operate with it. And in doing so, because it can somewhat simulate thinking, it will alter how we think and how we move forward with it. So let's move that into opportunities. Research now, I'll say, so I had a previous book called The AI Reckoning. Within that, I made some predictions that there were going to be certain skills that are necessary and there'll be certain evolutions that will grow as we adopt and use AI. We have data on that now. It's showing that it's not enough now to just know how to use AI. The very skilled workers that are actually getting a competitive edge are starting to think differently, and they're starting to think how they can collaborate and think as a collaboration partner with AI as an entity.
Walsh College, again, as I mentioned, your home away from home, where you are vice president, chief academic officer, academic dean, is at the forefront of welcoming AI in the classroom. I know you are integral in creating the curriculum for degree programs from the bachelor's to doctoral degrees in machine learning. What makes these Walsh College degree programs stand out?
I believe, I'll say, obviously, you know, I have to, you know, I'm part of the creation of that, so take that with a grain of salt. But I would say, I think the very specific difference that Walsh College brings to the AI discussion, whether that's on the technical side, learning how to create AI, or if it's on the business education side of AI and learning how to adopt it and use it to propel your career forward, all of our education is wrapped around practical, real-world skill building, and we make sure that that's integrated within the classroom. So what I mean by that specifically is, you know, we have doctoral students and people graduating. They're doing practical AI research. They're bringing that into the teaching experience. So am I. And that enables people to go from the classroom directly into their day job and take what they've learned in the class the night before and bring it to work and have an impact. So that is what I believe that distinguishes our AI education, be that technical or business, different from some of the other programs out there.
And you just don't theorize about AI human collaboration. You live it. What is this digital twin? What? How do you use your digital twin, Dr. Skippers?
Yeah, so the twin, you know, it's always, people often get fascinated when I bring that up. And it has been a fascinating journey. I've been doing this for about 2 years. So the goal originally was, in essence, to take an AI in essence, I'll say, clone my knowledge base. So the way it started was take all of my research, take all of my books, all of the different writing that I've done, encapsulate that into a knowledge base for an AI, and then actually have it speak, well, not literally speak, because I use a text-based one, and that is based off of trying to mimic how I interact and how my, you know, my vocalization patterns as far as how I speak and things like that. So I viewed my litmus test with this. I always snicker when I say this. As it got better and better, I started to have my wife, Leslie, see the output from it and say, what does this sound like me? And I think, you know, at some point, it's been a while now, she said, dear God, it does sound exactly like you. It's mimicking how you communicate. But it was an experiment in, could I do that? And then two, part of what I do is, and this is the whole piece I was speaking about earlier with collaborating, is I use it now. Like, I will come up with ideas. Obviously, I have a leadership role. I have to come up with new initiatives. I have to plan out things. And I will initially create some plans. I will then turn around, actually take those plans. I will run it through my twin and say, okay, based off of these needs and these goals and outcomes, I want you to evaluate this plan for pros, cons, and shortcomings and things that should be changed in order to better accomplish the goals. Now, I give it very specific context to do that. And I use it to, quote, fact-check my thinking. I use it to cross-check me. I'm also very careful. Like, I want to be succinct. So when I ask it for ideas or for review, I may do that in a very generic way so it doesn't lean into just trying to make me happy, if that makes sense. So AI can do that. Some of the generic AIs will just kind of lean into giving you what you want. I've specifically developed mine that they will push back and go, is this really the right approach? Does this follow logical deductions and things like that? So that's how I share. So I'll say I use it as a collaboration partner and thinking partner to go, have I evaluated this effectively? You know, I'll say on the job, we all have good days and bad days, right? So sometimes things go well, sometimes things don't go so well. And I always, when I have critical decisions, I run it through it and go, is this a correct path, or evaluate this for meeting these goals and outcomes?
Talking all things AI, here to stay, author of AI for Analogs, A Simple Plain English Guide, with us, Dr. Dave Skippers, Grand Rapids Base, Chief Academic Officer, Academic Dean with Troy Base Walsh College. What do you leave us with? What's the takeaway about AI in your words?
The takeaway is embrace it and learn how to have it excel your thinking and grow your skills.
It's as easy as that. How do we find out more information about your work and your book?
So for Walsh College, go to walshcollege.edu. The offerings that we have for AI are going to be under the program section there. So I'd strongly recommend, if you're interested in that, we have everything from degrees all the way down to 4-course certificates. And lastly, for the book, the easy way to get to that is just go to AIforanalogs.com. It'll take you to my site, and then you can get everything you need there. There's some free downloads and resources to get started and try things out for free.
Easy is good. Thank you for the many hats you wear, and we'll continue our read when it comes to AI. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you racing against time? It's the title of the work by my next guest. Racing Against Time on Ironman, Ultra Marathons, and the Quest for Transformation in Midlife. There's a question mark. Jeffrey here on the line. Jeffrey, it's Weiss or Wise. I wrote down the wrong word.
Weiss
on the line. He's a big deal. Didn't start this running opportunity until, well, his 48th year in life, and now look what you are doing. You are here to talk, of course, about what you have been doing, but also to give us a thought or two. Are we racing against time? Jeffrey, good morning.
Good morning.
What are you training for?
Right now, training for the Chicago Marathon next October.
I didn't get in the lottery. We'll do that again next year. What a beautiful race that is, but I don't want to digress too much. We are here to talk about, obviously, fitness and health and more, but also a little bit about you and an inspiration. So let's dispel a myth. Is this book only about racing?
No, I think for me, it really is about how we age and how we want to age, and trying to do those things that we can do to basically help ourselves be the best version of ourselves for as long as possible, to be able to do the things that we want to do for as many years as we can.
Writing, no stranger to you, Jeffrey, also the co-author of I Am My Brother's Keeper and more, and certainly I see you've been featured on a 2014 documentary, Above and Beyond, Beyond and More. Are you living in Tel Aviv?
I am. I'm actually not there right now. I left 2 days before this current war started for a trip to the States for a conference. I'm supposed to go back there in a couple weeks.
This could be a whole interview in itself. But I want to get back to racing against time. Talk to me a little bit about some highlights of your life, some lowlights, and then get into the theme.
I think for me... I think when I was younger, I was quite athletic, played college tennis, then got into powerlifting for about a decade after that. And then I think in many ways my story is pretty typical for a lot of us. I got married, had kids, and spent less and less time in the gym, less and less time focused on my physical health. And then when I turned 48, my dad had passed away the year before, And I had always told myself, I think, at least subconsciously, that I would start to get serious about fitness later in life when I had more time. And I kind of realized later was now that there was no more time. It wouldn't be prudent to put it off any further. So decided to finally get serious about getting in shape, and took a running class of all things, the culmination of which after 2 months was a 10K, and really found myself bitten by the bug, and kept going initially just with running, and then was cross training. So got involved in triathlon as well. And for me, it was a great journey. It's still a great journey, still going. I'm now 63, have accomplished things that I never would have thought possible, and really have enjoyed it immensely, and wanted to share it with others and encourage other people to kind of test their limits, see what they can do. And I think it's been very life enhancing for me, and I think it will be for others as well, whatever particular activity they choose.
Yes, dubbed a motivational sports memoir, where you do chronicle grueling endurance running accomplishments. Grueling can be taken in many a way. What has been your longest effort thus far?
My longest triathlon was a full Ironman. I've done that twice. And for ultra marathons, my longest was a 72-mile race around Lake Tahoe, which sits at California-Nevada border. That one took me almost 21 hours to run. That's the longest I have done, and probably the longest I will ever try, I imagine.
What has kept you going throughout? Obviously, not only we know how important training is, but let's go to the race itself when it's perhaps dark out and you need to finish.
I think what keeps me going in those situations is I just know how happy I will be when I cross the finish line. I know how satisfied I will be looking back on a successful finish, on a successful accomplishment of something that was hard. I remember there's a sign that I often see at marathons, pain is temporary, victory is forever. And I actually think about that a lot during races when things get hard, that, if I can just persevere, if I can just finish this race, I'll be so happy that I did. And it can be a guard against surrendering to the discomfort and perhaps in a really hard race considering dropping out.
I'm sure you've run by the signs "Touch for Power" many of time as well. Jeffrey Weiss, we are talking to you on the topic of your latest work, Racing Against Time, on Ironman Ultramarathons and the Quest for, how about this last, the Quest for Transformation in Midlife. Expand on this.
As I think for me, basically, there's a lot of focus these days on health span and longevity. Longevity, how long we might live, and health span, essentially that part of life where we are healthy, free of disease, fit. And the longevity piece doesn't particularly move me. I think there are lots of variables there that I don't entirely control. But I do think health span, we can really extend. And it's not a scientifically controversial thing. I think if we take care of ourselves, and in particular, if we exercise regularly, we can be a lot fitter for a lot longer and have a lot richer of a life, being able to do more and more of the things that we like for much longer, to ski, to hike, to play with grandchildren, whatever it might be, on the physical side of life. And that really hugely drives me. And I think that's where we can really experience true transformation. And so for me, when I was 48, I really was out of shape, had put on some weight. And after a few years of running, of doing some marathons, some triathlons, I really did feel very transformed physically and also emotionally. I really just felt great that I was able to do things that I had previously thought impossible. I'd once told a friend that I was as likely to walk on the moon as I was to run a marathon. Mm-hmm. And then to realize that actually I can do it and can even go farther is a wonderful thing to discover about yourself.
And lastly, is there a connection between I'll say, extreme endurance sports growth with success in other spheres of life, Jeff?
I think so. I think, and certainly I have felt it in my professional life. I've pushed myself there as well and have been able to surprise myself in the things that I can be part of and that I can accomplish. And I think it's great to pursue excellence, audacity in all spheres of our life, not just the physical, but also in our personal relationships, in our professional work. And I do think that accomplishments in one sphere can essentially give us confidence to do great things in other parts of our life that also matter and perhaps matter even more. I think for me, they're very kind of reinforcing the physical, the professional, the personal, and we should want to do our best, be our best in everything that we do.
In 2024, you founded Stickers of Meaning. What is this project?
It has to do with these memorial stickers that have appeared in Israel since over the last 2 years of war there, memorializing folks who were either murdered at the Nova Music Festival or soldiers who've died in the fighting. And they have the name of the person, dates of birth and death, but also very typically kind of an inspiring motto or saying, often about being joyful, being loving, being kind, being bold, being audacious, all manner of things that really are there to encourage the living to be their best selves, to live their best lives. And it reminded me so much of the kinds of things that I've enjoyed reading over the years that I see on signs at marathons and the like, and felt that they were quite special and wanted to see that they would be preserved. So created a website to really preserve them, catalog them, and make sure that they don't just disappear when the physical stickers inevitably go away.
Wonderful. What began for you as a simple challenge to run a single 10K race, well, turned into the ultra, racing against time on Ironman ultra marathons and the quest for transformation in midlife. Jeff Weiss, how do we find out more information about your work?
Probably best, I have an author website, jeffreyweissauthor.com, and the book is best accessed on obtained from Amazon, either in a paperback Kindle version or an audiobook.
Thanks for, again, inspiring. Take care. See you at the start line. Enjoy your days back in Tel Aviv. Be safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You'll like the title, The Brat and the Bullfighter. It's coming out soon, a beautiful memoir about a unique relationship between a woman and her horse. Let's see how the title is correlated with that introduction. Erin O'Malley on the line. Let's hope she can have that answer. A lifelong horse lover, reluctant extrovert who credits her love of telling stories to her upbringing as an army brat. There's the brat part. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning. And you got it. That is the brat part. I am an army brat. And I would say, so the book, it's a love story. That's sort of the subtitle.
Yep.
And it is Army Brat meets Brazilian Bullfighter, falls in love, like deeply in love, because he's gorgeous and fiery and sensitive, like completely out of my league. But he also just happens to be a horse. That's my Lusitano horse, Artie. And the book unfolds in a braided narrative, sort of from our two points of view. So me, obviously the brat, and then Artie, my Lusitano, who is from bullfighting lines. He's the Vega line of the Lusitano, which is the Portuguese national breed, although my horse was born in Brazil and then imported here to the States.
Yeah, we forget that horses can be involved in what? Bullfighting.
They absolutely can. I mean, it still goes on, and I know it's a very controversial subject, one that I would think I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because I don't believe in the sport. I think it's a blood sport and it's cruel. Although in Portugal, they don't kill the bull. But there's also a beauty to it. These horses are bred to be so brave, so valiant, so in tune with their rider, and they're athletic and agile, you know, can turn on a dime sort of thing. So with that, there is the dance of it all I find beautiful, and I hope that's not horrific to say, but it's more my respect for the horse in that and what the horse will do for us and what the horse has done for us, you know, through the ages, really.
Isn't your story, though, a theme? Some horses don't just change your life, they save it.
Yeah, it is. So for me, So as an army brat, I grew up moving around all the time. And I always say the one constant in my life was my love for horses. I mean, that carried through. I came out of the womb just loving horses. My whole family didn't know why. I think my grandfather was the only person who had ever done anything with horses before that. But, you know, my parents were kind enough everywhere I went. They, you know, I insisted on lessons. And so I got to ride, I got to be with horses. And then, you know, at one point, as happens with people, I kind of, you know, went off on my adventures and horses kind of fell to the wayside. I didn't have the means or the opportunity to happen in my life. But when they did come back, and this is when I was about 29, and I kept moving, I'd, you know, lived abroad, I was in Paris, I came back, I'd had a broken heart, and a friend got me back into horses. She said, you know, you should just, you know, they meant a lot to you, so long, I'm making a, as my husband would say, I'm making a short story long. So the way I say they saved me is that they became my home. They became the only reason that I stayed rooted to a place. I got my first horse, and they said, I'll never leave you. I'll never go anywhere without you. I stuck to my word. And then, but this particular horse, Artie, when he came into my life, it was kind of a surprise. And not to give anything away, but I had a couple of bad events happen to me, like boom, boom, right after another. And he really became my reason for getting out of bed in the morning. I just didn't, I didn't want to go on, you know. And but because I made a promise to this horse, and he was so in need of that person that, yeah. So I say he saved me, I say horses saved me. I call them my home and my religion. They're just my passion.
Wow, that is wonderful. Again, the work is the Brat and the Bullfighter. What are other takeaway messages? I was lucky to have a horse or two growing up, but one may not have that opportunity. What's a theme here?
Oh, gosh. You know, I do feel so fortunate to have them in my life. I think, for me, another reason I wrote this book, and it comes out in a braided narrative. It's told from my point of view and the horse's point of view. And I actually had never intended it to be a memoir. I thought, like, who else to read about me? And it just kind of evolved as that. But the horse's point of view is really important to me because I still think horses today, I see it too often, are mislabeled, misunderstood. There's little empathy for them. And for me, having been moved around a lot, and I see horses moved around a lot, I kind of was like, oh, I really identify with this. So if there's a message there, I think it's one of patience and, again, empathy. And, you know, as you said, you know, not everybody has horses in their lives. If they wanted to have a horse in their life, I don't know if you want me to talk about that. I think sometimes people think, oh, I need to own a horse, but you don't, you know, just it's a place where you can take lessons. I don't know if people know you can lease a horse. That's how I got into horse ownership. I had never known that it was a possibility, but there are people who, you know, their lives kind of take off and they might need someone to come in and help them out. And so you get that experience without having to make the full commitment. But I also say, you know, we were talking earlier, it's a lifestyle. It's not like riding a bike where you can put it in a closet and, you know, just take it out on the weekends. This is a daily commitment that you have to this animal. But it's the reward is boundless.
Yes. Well, as is the read. It's not a fairy tale. Again, you question everything, your choices, ability, whether you're helping or hurting them. But when this unexpected loss, well, .. Let's talk about finding out more information on how to get your book, The Brat and the Bullfighter, coming out in July.
It's coming out, yeah, July 28th. My website is Erin O'Malley, author. .com, and it will be sold where books are sold, you know. I don't want to promote any individual corporation, but you know, look at your local library too. It should be at your local library.
I love the front cover. There's your horse.
Oh, that is, yeah. That is my horse, myself. Like I said, I'd never intended it to be a story about myself, too, and I never intended to be on my cover, but I was super pleased to have Artie on the cover.
How fun. Again, now, a bit about you, a bit about Artie, and, of course, this bond. Keep up the good work. You do continue to focus on marketing, content strategy with your hubby, a couple of horses, and don't forget those three dogs.
Thank you so
much. Erin O'Malley, thank you. Again, your book is The Brat and the Bullfighter. Take care.
Appreciate so much. Bye.
We They call her Dr. B. Dr. Jenny Byrne with us, Changing How We Understand ADHD in Accomplished Adults. The book is out, ADHD in Professionals, Embracing Your Brain, revealing why many doctors, executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders are succeeding outwardly or on paper, but quietly struggling. Let's let you continue that. Dr. Byrne, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you for you, your PhD, your MD, and I'm sure your resume quite lengthy. Congratulations on your success thus far. You even obviously known for your honest, pragmatic voice and your commitment to telling the truth about mental health. We need more of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's get into our conversation where basically, according to your ADHD and Professionals, Embracing Your Brain, are successful professionals secretly struggling with ADHD?
Yes, and this may be a surprise to some. There's a lot of stigma and shame around this topic, which is why I wrote the book. But in my over 20 years of practice now, I've worked with many, many professionals, including physicians, attorneys, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and others who have gone many years either with undiagnosed and or untreated ADHD. And they're very impressive people. They've done very impressive things. They are high achieving. And yet at the same time, they're struggling. And they are struggling to understand their brain and how their brain fits into the environment they're in.
And hence, you ask to embrace the brain, which we'll get to. What are some signs that people might recognize in themselves that they are struggling and yet successful?
Sure. So if you're out there listening and wondering if you might have ADHD, a really good thing to look for is your family genetic history. So ADHD is highly heritable, meaning that it's passed on genetically, not in every case, but it's highly genetic. So if you have kids who have been diagnosed with ADHD and you've looked at them and thought, that's awful lot like me, it's possible that you may have ADHD too, or a brother or a sister or a parent. So looking at your biological family is a clue. If you struggle with things like getting started, complex tasks, modulating attention the way you want, time management, and emotional regulation and impulsivity, these are all some of the core features of ADHD. But if you're a high-achieving professional, you've probably learned ways to cope and compensate over the years. So often what I hear from these professionals is not that they're not functioning, but more that they feel like there's something just not quite right. Like, if only I could blank, if only I could start things on time, if only I could get my wash done, if only I could control my emotions. And you hear this long history of if onlys.
What are your thoughts on how, well, HR and management respond to people in their organizations who have ADHD?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. I have a chapter in the book about this because a lot of folks in HR and management are very confused about what to do. And so as a result, they typically don't do anything for fear of making a mistake. But really, the key here is to understanding the diverse types of brains that you have in your workplace. So ADHD is one brain variant that we think is 5 to 10% of the population, but there are other kinds of brain variants, including autism spectrum and others. So by understanding everybody's brain and how they function best, you can really get the most out of the people that work for you. So just a very simple example would be allowing for movement. So if you're in an in-person work setting where everyone is expected to sit down all the time, that may be very difficult for the folks with ADHD brains. Allowing them to stand up during a meeting, for example, or even have something in their hands that they can fidget with during the meeting may actually help them pay attention better. So that's just a very simple example of things that can be done.
Does ADHD often look different for women?
Definitely. Most women, unless they're, you know, in their early 20s or younger, were not diagnosed as a kid because we used to think it only existed in boys, and we know that is not true. So in women, often it's been undiagnosed or untreated, and often it's been misdiagnosed, and they'll have problems like depression, anxiety, emotional regulation, And sometimes they've been even misdiagnosed with things like bipolar disorder and maybe taking a lot of medicines for the wrong thing. The other thing I see in women a lot is they do well with their coping skills and their ways to keep high achieving until life starts throwing things at them. So, for example, throwing a family, kids, a spouse. Sometimes it's perimenopause that really throws them for a loop. When life starts to throw a lot at them and their coping mechanisms aren't working anymore, that's often where they really start to feel the struggle and where they'll come to me.
And you are Dr. Jenny Byrne, Dr. B. Of course, your title of the book, ADHD and Professionals, Embracing Your Brain. We've touched on this. I mean, is there treatment? Is there management? What's the course here for future?
Yeah, the good news is we're learning more about ADHD, and there are actually a lot of tools available to help embrace your brain. So most people think about medication, and that is definitely one tool in the toolkit. And I know there's a lot of debate out there about medicines, but the most important thing to know about medicines is that even though we know about Ritalin and Adderall and the stimulants that are in the press a lot, there are actually a lot of non-stimulant medications for ADHD as well. So some people, medication is a great tool. Other people, no. So other things you can do with ADHD are controlling your environment. There are a lot of ways that a coach can work with you on ways to control your environment to make it fit your brain better. Things like physical activity and exercise are extremely helpful for ADHD. This doesn't have to be, you know, hitting the gym 5 days a week. But as I mentioned earlier, even just being able to stand up and walk around at work can make a big difference. So physical activity can be very helpful. And then one of the things I'm most excited about in ADHD is we're starting to see some neurophysiological tools that you can use. So for example, biofeedback or neurofeedback, where we can actually have sensors to pick up on our electrical activity in our brain, and we can train our brain and see different types of electrical activity. So for example, there is a new video game out on the market for kids with ADHD where they can use their brain waves to actually play the video game. And by playing the video game, they can train their brain waves. And we're seeing stuff like this come out for adults soon as well.
Wow.
Some of that, which is not reliant on medication.
Thank you for that. The future does look bright, and yet recognizing the struggle and the intent important. Your book is out. I trust where all fine books are sold, ADHD and Professionals, Dr. B?
Yeah, Amazon is the best place to find the book, and you can just look up my name, Jenny. It's J-E-N-N-I-E, Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, and you should be able to find it there.
Keep up your good work. Thanks for helping, these successful professionals. You take care.
Thank you.
This was special, the 21st annual Paul New, that's NEU Memorial Golf Classic. It's come and gone, hosted by Byron Center-based DLN Integrated Systems, surpassing a major milestone, raising more than $1 million, yes, for the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, so lives being touched. So let's talk about that and obviously what else is happening under the umbrella of the Epilepsy Foundation. Good morning to you, Aaron Jones, Senior Marketing Manager for DLN Integrated Systems. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to you, Melissa Conway, Board Vice Chair of the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. We also see you out and about, Director of Community Partnerships and Giving with Meyer, Strong in Our Own Backyard. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yes. And may I add, the mom of a son who has epilepsy.
That's right.
Seizure-free for how long?
He's been seizure-free for 5 years, off medication for 4, and really doing well.
How important is it that you measure these times?
It's really important. When you get a diagnosis for a child with epilepsy, it really it really changes your life, and it becomes a big part of your journey. But it's also a journey that you don't have to do alone, and that's the biggest discovery, is that there's a community of people that are going to lock arms with you and help you. So
wonderful. Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan, you are statewide. Talk to me more about the foundation, Melissa.
The foundation really is a magical place, and I say that as a parent first. It is a great community of people and a great staff of people who have a wealth of resources for anyone on an epilepsy journey. So whether you have epilepsy yourself, a child of with epilepsy, a friend, you're a parent, there are so many resources available to you. And a lot of families start that journey really not knowing where to start, and they are a great place to start for education, for community, for resources, help with doctors, you name it. They should be your first stop.
Yes. Having a bit of experience, having been on the board as yourself and many others, and yet I need a catch-up. I think you're based in Southfield, or is there a presence here in West?
They serve the entire state. So, yes, their offices are in Southfield, but they are always on the move, and they get everywhere from the west side to the mid part to this to the west side and up into the UP. So they serve everyone in the state of Michigan.
Before I get to you, Erin, let me ask Melissa, what does one do if a seizure has just been upon us?
When you encounter a seizure, if you are someone witnessing a seizure, you really just want to help that person be safe. You want to make sure that they can't cause any harm to themselves through any kind of erratic movements or something that might hurt the head. And you just want to stay with them and make sure that they are safe. If you are the one having the seizure, that is something that, you know, you can't necessarily always prepare for or even know that's coming on. So you want to be able to have people around you that are able to know what to look out for and kind of help you through that as well. So and definitely going to get some care from a neurologist or an epileptologist. You want to definitely get care so you can understand the cause of your seizures and also how to treat them.
And get in touch with the foundation.
And especially get in touch with the foundation.
Yes. Erin Jones, talk to me about DLN Integrated Systems. What do you do? What's the system all about?
Well, we were founded. DLN was founded in 2002. And we are a Byron Center-based company. We have about 90 staff now. We've been continuing to grow every year. And the company was originally founded by Dave New and Paul New, and then our current owner of the company, Phil Schaffsma. So we've been continuing to grow ever since then. And what we do is we are an independent systems integrator that helps design, engineer, and support automated distribution centers and systems for companies that need help with their material handling.
That is called an elevator pitch, which you just nailed. Let's get into the New family. And I keep going back to NEU. Paul New, again, I'm pretty sure he lost his life due to epilepsy.
He did. He tragically lost his life in 2005. He was only 38 years old, so it was very unexpected. And that happened from complications of the epilepsy that he had battled for many years before that. His parents were Dave and Joanne New, and they really wanted to create an event to honor his memory because he was a very special person, very engaging. Everybody loved him. He was known for his optimism and sense of humor, and they really wanted to memorialize their son and also do some good for the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. So our event has continued to grow over the years, and we're just so thrilled with the impact we've been able to have.
Yes. And things have changed from 2005 to 2026, I'm sure, in treatment and more. We'll get back to you on that. Staying with you, Erin, so there was a Paul New Memorial Golf Classic that was a success.
It was a tremendous success. So this event has been going on since 2006. The first year we raised around $20,000. We had no expectations for how engaged people would be in this event. And this past year, just in 2026, the event held on June 22nd at Railside Golf Club raised $113,000, which means that our cumulative total of the amount raised since the event's inception is over $1 million, $1,039,000 to be exact.
Melissa Conway, in general, on behalf of the foundation, where does that money go?
That money makes a huge impact on a lot of different programs to help folks with epilepsy. It's helped send 342 children to camp where they can have a very safe and very kid-like camp experience for free. They've offered 71 sessions of their chronic disease self-management program, which helps individuals gain the tools and support they need to manage their health. It's helped provide 1,000 seizure recognition and first aid trainings, which makes our schools, workplaces, and communities safer and more informed, like we were just talking about. And it's helped them deliver more than 12,500 hours of support through their Here For You helpline, which helps ensure that no one has to navigate epilepsy alone.
Yes. And yet, well, first of all, I hope there will be a 22nd annual. But
that's the plan. Yes, absolutely.
That's the plan. And in between, raising dollars continues to be needed. Talk to me about the summer stroll coming up. Staying with you, Melissa.
Yeah, we're really excited. The Grand Rapids Stroll for Epilepsy Day is coming up on July 11th. It is going to be held at Meyer Gardens. It's from 10 a.m. to noon. It's a great year to do it. Your registration, which is $30, gets you into the garden. And, of course, they have the beautiful Chihuly exhibit going on right now, so that's kind of a nice twofer. And it's an opportunity to not only raise funds for the programs that the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan provides, but also to find your community. Especially, you know, here in West Michigan, if you're navigating epilepsy, it's a great opportunity to find other people who are going through similar journeys to you and get to know them and make some connections. And I should say, this is not, it's not like one of your 5Ks or anything like that.
No, it's a stroll.
I have my pink hat, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
But it is an opportunity. It is very accessible. It is really just a great day at the gardens and an opportunity to talk and truly a stroll. So it is something we look forward to every year. You can come as an individual. Encourage you to register in advance because we do expect a great turnout, but if there is availability, you can also decide the day of and just show up and register at the door, and we'd be glad to have you.
Wonderful. Yes, get your team together or just your family or just you. Stroller, animal friendly? Probably not animal friendly.
Not animal friendly unless it's a service animal. It's still subject to Meyer Gardens admission policies, but absolutely. You see a lot of strollers. It's also mobility friendly, so you don't have to be even a walker. You can
stroll and roll.
You can stroll and roll, exactly.
It's the world in which we live, as we must. What else must we know on behalf of DLN Integrated Systems and you, Erin?
We are just a wonderful company, and I know a lot of companies talk about their fabulous corporate culture and their family feel, but this company is truly one of the few companies that I've ever had exposure to that truly walks the walk. So we spend a lot of time building and developing our corporate culture, and it really comes back to not only serving our employees, which helps us serve our clients well, but also really just being a part of the community in which we live. And the Epilepsy Foundation is just one way that we really focus on giving back. We also do quite a bit of work with Toys for Tots program, and then we support several other local organizations as well. So when it comes to being a presence, being a positive presence in the local community, we really strive to make a mark and improve our community in which we live.
Wonderful. And how do we find out more information about your organization?
I would love to have you go to DLNInc.com. That's D as in Dave, L as in Larry, N as in Nancy, Inc.com.
All right. Did you get to play golf or did you?
I didn't. I was supervised. Busy volunteering. Yes. Taking pictures and whatnot.
Nice. And you see the news from time to time?
Dave and Joanne New have both passed on.
I didn't know.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I should have known that. No problem. Diane is a daughter.
Diane New is still involved, and they support the foundation through this event. And then also the Stout family, which is another one of Paul's siblings. They are supporters as well. So They are involved and help us present this event every year.
Watching down from heaven, may the news, as the Memorial Golf Classic will continue for the next year. Melissa Conway, hey, Meyer's all about the community, don't you think?
We do. We absolutely are all about the community. So it is wonderful to be able to serve in both a capacity professionally, to be in a role that serves the community, and then also as a vice chair. This is such a personal commitment to me. It's wonderful to have it in my personal life as well.
What's your boy doing today?
Today he is probably hanging out with friends. He had a big basketball scrimmage last night, and he was sleeping in when I left.
Thank you for that. He is a boy. Mom cares. Thank you very much. Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. Is there a website for this?
There is. You can go to epilepsymichigan.org. You will find all kinds of resources there, and that's also where you can go to register for the stroll.
Yes. And my post-stroll, post-race chips I can get at Meyer.com?
Absolutely. Please do. So,
thank you all for this conversation. Congratulations on the 21st annual Paul New Memorial Golf Classic, which broke some records and now paying forward to others. Take care.
Thank you.
Your inspiration for the day, J.R.R. Tolkien says, all we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. So I need 25 hours in a day. Let's pretend. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a super weekend. Thanks for listening.